Welcome to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander. Get Your Barbecue On is a show for backyard cooks looking for tips and insight into barbecuing, grilling, entertaining, and enjoying themselves outside with delicious food. Each week, we'll share some barbecuing and grilling tips, techniques, recipes, and a few pitmaster secrets you just have to know. Every show will feature fun, interesting, and informative guests. And we'll also answer listener questions. Please send your questions to getyourbbqon@gmail.com or visit our website at kenshardwoodbbq.com and click radio show. Welcome to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander, the podcast. I'm here today with my guest host, the doctor, Dr. Andre Jones.
Hey!
All right, doctor. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good. Yeah, our guest today is Jay Powell of the Powell Law Firm. He's going to be talking to us today about family law and some of the other things he does around the community. So make sure you stay with us for the second half of the show.
Yeah.
But for now.
In the meantime, in between time.
Well, you remember last week.
We talked about fish.
Fish. We were going to talk about fish and seafood this week.
Right.
On the show.
That's right.
We're going to talk about grilling.
Uh-huh.
Fish steaks and whole fish today.
Oh, wow. Fish steaks and whole fish.
Yeah, like a whole fish or a fish steak. You know, the thing about it is, fish is really, a lot of people have problems trying to grill fish.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So we'll get into that and talk about some of those issues and how you avoid those issues.
Yes.
Grilling fish. And so you can grill the perfect steak or whole fish.
Sounds good. We're all about grilling the perfect or barbecuing the perfect. So
absolutely.
It's all about perfection around here.
That's right. That's right. So how do you cook fish? You've had the opportunity to, you've never mentioned fish as part of any kind of discussions that we've had.
No, I've never done that.
Not at all. So tell us about a little bit about your history.
Fish history? Well, you know, I probably need to go back and listen to Get Your Barbecue on Spotify, Anchor FM, Google Podcasts, or Apple Podcasts to find out for sure if I did not talk about fish. But in the meantime, though, so a fish, I don't do fish.
What?
Yeah, no.
You don't do fish?
No, I don't eat fish. Wow. No, I stopped eating fish when I was 12, when I got fish. And then I had this whole thing of fish tanks, and I was really involved in fish and keeping fish alive and cultivating fish and growing fish and all sorts of things about fish. I don't judge other people when they eat fish. I just don't eat fish.
So when you got fish as a pet.
Yeah,
pretty much. When you took on fish as pets.
Yes, yeah.
You decided that it's cannibalism. It just would not be right to eat fish again.
No, it's cannibalism. Why would I do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
No look on your face. It's no judgment, but you know.
No judgment here, doctor. No judgment. Yeah, unfortunately not. And I'm, I'm asking you. You know, no judgment for you.
Right.
I eat a lot of fish.
Oh, got it. All those poor fish. Just kidding.
Grilled, fried, however, baked. Yeah,
right.
I love fish.
Wow. You know,
seafood.
You know, the best fish I ever had. Actually,
yes.
I will say this. One of my dad's cousins came and stayed with us for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
And on Friday, she made fish. And I usually were like, I'm like, oh no, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah.
But that one?
Awesome.
Ooh-wee. Southern fried catfish. Like for reals this time.
All right.
It was quite amazing. I was like, I can never do this again. I like felt so bad afterwards. I went home and I looked at my fish. And I'm like, I can't tell you what I've done.
Right.
Not dramatic at all around here.
Yeah, not dramatic at all. Do you think they knew?
I think
they look at you through the glass.
I didn't look at them. I didn't look at them for a couple of days. I just fed them and just kept walking by. I didn't look at them.
Okay.
So they might have.
Well,
been suspicious.
I hope you can bear with us as we go and talk and tell our listening audience how to prepare
I haven't had fish.
And how to grill fish.
Yeah, I haven't had fish as a pet for like 3 years, so I think I'm good right now.
Yeah. You should be all right. Yeah. I don't think you'll leave here and have to go to your therapist or anything.
Right. No, I don't think so. Not this time.
Not this time. All right.
So how do you do it? So what is it? I've seen before people are like, it's the stickiest thing they've ever cooked.
So that's the biggest problem of cooking fish on a grill is the fact that it sticks to the grill. Most of the time people put it on the grill and they stick, and that's why they have all these devices or, different things that you use to try and get the fish not to stick on the grates of the grill.
Oh, wow.
So the thing is that this is grilling is high heat.
Yep.
And with fish, the temperature you want to have is on high, medium high to high. Mm-hmm. And you want to preheat the grill to 400 to 450 degrees.
Wow.
You
want
to preheat it because the fish is not going to be on the grill that long. The other thing is people tend to overcook the fish.
Really?
Right. And so, we'll start at the top.
Okay. Yeah. We'll start at the top.
Right. So the first thing, where do you find fish? And so I like to cook a lot of salmon.
Oh, okay.
And I'm, with salmon steaks and other fish steaks, I like with the skin on, one side on the, the skin on the steak. And usually somewhere around 5-6 ounce steaks is what I prefer to cook on a grill. And that is going to determine how long you leave it on a grill is how thick it is.
Oh, okay.
Right. And sometimes you have like some thin fish steaks, like if you're doing tilapia or fillets or whatever like that, and which don't take as much time on a grill, or you can do catfish fillets and things like that. And some of those are not going to have tilapia, could, but catfish is definitely not going to have skin on it.
Right.
Right. It's just going to be just the flesh, the meaty flesh on the grill.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The first thing is to season it.
Right.
And I would season it up. I like simpler is better.
Yeah.
One of the things I would do, like we talk about, is a binder.
Yeah.
I would take it, brush it with olive oil or whatever oil you like, maybe avocado oil, whatever.
Right.
And then take some fresh herbs, some other little spices, whatever flavor profile you prefer with your fish. Mm-hmm. Take some lime, some lemon. Citrus always goes well with fish. Mm-hmm. I would do that. And the other thing is, one is the thing you want to do is make sure the fish reaches room temperature.
Oh, really?
You don't want to put it on. Yeah, this is another way that you're going to prevent it from sticking on the grill.
Oh, got it.
So, and it's going to cook a bit faster. So once you season it, you want it to reach room temperature, then you're ready to grill it.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
That's all going to help. But for me, simpler is better. I want to get some of the flavor of the fish, but I really like some fresh herbs and fresh spices in there, and to get a really nice, delicious, because it's already a really healthy dish, really healthy food. And so that's what I recommend as far as how to season the fish.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. So cooking.
Yes.
We're going to do the grill setup is what I'm talking about now.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can cook a piece of fish directly on the grill if you prepare the grates correctly.
Oh.
And so to prepare the grates correctly is first thing you do, you need to heat the grill up properly. You need to have it hot.
Right.
Then you need to use some type of cooking spray, nonstick cooking spray.
Right. Right.
You know, or olive oil.
Right.
You know, something you can do, olive oil, avocado oil, some kind of oil on the grates. Mm-hmm. So when you place the fish on there, it's not going to stick.
Right.
Right. And then as you're flipping the fish over, or you turn the fish over, I think you should have some tongs and like a metal spatula just so it will release from the grill if you're careful with it.
Got it.
And flip it over.
So both at the same time.
Like just kind of like be easy with it.
Gentle. You know? Don't force it.
Right, right. And so one of the other things is that you want to cook the fish. So if you have skin on the fish, you're going to cook it with the skin up.
Okay.
So you're going to place it on the grill, skin up, and then when you turn it over, and that has a tendency to sort of fish will stay together better that way.
Right.
If you put that flesh side down first and then the skin side when you flip it over.
Oh, wow. So it sounds like they can fall apart as you're trying to flip it around.
They can, especially if you haven't prepared the grill correctly and you haven't. It's definitely going to stick and it's definitely going to fall apart.
Makes sense.
And so we'll talk about it, but I'll talk about some other things that you could use to make sure that that doesn't happen or you don't stick to the grill. And I think we talked about it before, those like little copper mats or
like a basket, I think that's what you said last basket. Week.
Yeah. But even if you use one of the grill baskets, it really needs to be properly lubricated with the non-stick cooking spray or the oil and the brush degrades off. Right. So the thing about grilling fish, and so we talked about how do we prepare to grill.
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about the temperature that we're cooking at. We always talk, it's just two temperatures.
Right.
The heat or the temperature that you're cooking the food, and the other temperature is the internal temperature of the food.
Right.
So the internal temperature of the fish that we're trying to reach is 145 degrees.
Okay.
That's based on USDA recommendations.
Right.
But a lot of people like their fish a little rarer than that. So anywhere from 130 to 145. But as we talk about all the time, 145, you don't have to worry about any foodborne illnesses.
Right.
Right. Right.
Otherwise, you're taking a risk.
Right. Otherwise, you're taking a risk. Mm-hmm. So we place the fish on the grill.
Yeah.
So we let it, and it's not going to be on there long. It's only going to be on there like minutes. And so, so if you say you have a 6 ounce piece of meat, anywhere, you know, 6 ounce fish steak, then you're going to leave it on the grill for, you know, maybe about 4 or 5 minutes.
Sure.
And then you're going to flip it over on the skin side. And so you're going to leave it there. And so when the fish, when it looks opaque,
right,
and that's about the time when you see it's ready, you can put your little thermometer in there.
Mm-hmm.
And see the temperature, and it's probably ready. It's not going to be on there, but only just a few minutes.
Wow. Sounds like it's a very quick.
Yeah, because you're cooking it. And that's the other thing is that a lot of times people dry the fish out because the grill is not hot enough when they put it on.
Oh, no.
Right.
So then leave it on longer than it needs to be.
Leave it on longer than it needs to be. And then, and to me, there's nothing worse than dry salmon. Right. So now let's talk a little bit about whole fish. Thing is, so they have these like, and I talked about it, we talked about it last week. You can eat one of these little fish holders. It's shaped like a fish.
Yeah.
It's a little black metal thing and you could slide the fish in there and it makes it a lot easier to cook a whole piece of fish. But you can still cook the fish on the grates. But if you want to just be able to just to flip it over, whatever, I would recommend you get one of these little fish holders that you can cook a whole fish in.
Wow. Keeps it clean.
Right. Keeps it clean. And you take the whole fish and, you know, it's going to be skin on. A lot of times you buy, and I bought some salmon and they still have the scales on.
Oh, right.
Right. Right. And so you just take a spoon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I used to be a fisherman.
Did you really? Oh, wow. Yeah.
Don't tell your fish.
I won't tell my fish. I promise. No one will ever know.
But yeah, I mean, I still fish now, but you just take a spoon and you can easily get all those. Because sometimes you'll buy some salmon and you want to leave the skin on, but it still has the scales in some places. So you just take that spoon
and
you just
remove the scales.
Yeah, go against the grain and the scales will come right off.
Oh, wow.
Right. So anyway, so you have this fish, whole fish, and sometimes people will take that fish and how do you prep it? Same way, you know, you want to, I would say, put some olive oil on it, right? Especially if you're going to put it directly on the grill. And some people will take some of those herbs and just kind of stuff it inside the fish.
Oh, interesting.
Right, inside the fish, then season it up real good, stick it in the little fish holder.
Right.
Right. And again, you're going to be using a hot grill.
Right.
A hot grill. So again, medium heat, a medium high to high, 400 to 450 degrees.
Right.
And then you put it on there and you're cooking a whole fish. And again, it all depends on the weight.
Right.
And a whole fish, you could cook a whole fish probably somewhere between 10 to 12 minutes.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
You'd have leave it on there on the first side. You leave it on there 5 to 7 minutes. And again, it all depends on the fish. And
right.
just like we said, you got two temperatures and right. you're trying to reach 145
right.
with the internal temperature of the meat.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Makes so, sense.
And that's how you would do a whole fish pretty much.
Oh, pretty simple.
Pretty simple.
Really easy. Actually.
It's all pretty simple. It's,
yeah. You
know, cooking fish on a grill is simple and fast.
Yeah.
The only problem you have is
the prep of the grill.
The prep, and so it won't stick to the grill.
That makes sense.
So if you can eliminate the sticking, mm-hmm. then grilling fish is easy.
Easy. Makes sense. So, wow.
Yeah. That's grilling fish.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
All right.
Well, I believe it or not, I will give it a try, you know, before I get any fish anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I don't want to do it after I get fish. But while I don't have any fish as pets, it would be good to grill some fish.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
It would be.
No.
Yeah. You don't want to traumatize your...
No. No. Get this new tank and the fish are there and then all of a sudden they start smelling and, you know, it'd just be bad.
Traumatize the fish community in your home.
They pretty much just would not be good. Would not be good. We're getting right. fish here at the studio, but, you know, it'll be some time before I get some at home.
All right. Well, it's time for us to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Ken from Ken's Hardwood Barbecue Restaurant, where we have created a blend of barbecue and Southern cooking. We have taken the best barbecue styles and flavors from Texas, Missouri, and the Carolinas. What food has meant to my family is a way to come together and fellowship. We invite you to come and join us. We are located at 5250 East 22nd Street in Tucson at the crossroads of Craycroft and 22nd. Call us at 520-745-4746. Come on down and get your barbecue on. Hey, welcome back to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander. I'm here with my co-host, the doctor.
Da-da-da-da.
Dr. Andre Da-da-da-da. Jones.
Hey, hey, hey.
And it's that time of the show where we answer a listener question.
All right. And this question comes from Thomas here in Tucson.
All right.
Here in a good old Tucson.
I'm glad to hear we have some Tucson listeners.
I know. I am. I am too. And he wants to know, how does he grill some kebabs? And apparently what he's doing, kind of similar to what I was doing at one point.
Right,
when I had
right,
the
right.
chicken kebabs. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. he said he has chicken and he has beef kebabs. So he's wondering, how exactly does he cook it? What temperature does he need to get it? The internal temperature of the meat. What does he need to get it at?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, so you've got chicken and the chicken is in a chunk. It's typically
right.
going to be in a chunk where... Mm-hmm. A lot of times they take and they make those kebabs with chicken breasts.
Right.
Sometimes they might use boneless, skinless chicken thighs to
right.
make it. But whatever it is, it's chicken. It needs to go to 145. I mean, 165.
Mm-hmm.
And with beef, it's the same thing. They're taking it from a steak and they're mm-hmm. cutting the beef. And typically that needs to reach 145 degrees. Mm-hmm. And so it's done.
Got it.
So 145 degrees for 15 seconds.
Right.
And then the beef is done.
Okay.
And so anything on that kebab has to go to the same place the beef goes.
Right. That
right.
makes sense.
Right.
That
right,
makes
right.
sense.
So, and the other thing is, like, once you've put chicken on a kebab, then everything is considered chicken.
Oh, wow. But what about the beef?
Well, if you have beef and chicken on a kebab and uh-huh. somehow you cross-contaminate the beef with the chicken,
uh-oh.
The beef has to go to 165.
Oh, wow.
And that's one of the big, and that's why we don't want to cross-contaminate beef.
Right, 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 right.
Right, because they have different temperatures that they mm-hmm. have to reach mm-hmm. to basically kill any type of foodborne illnesses that would be resident in those types of meat.
That makes sense.
Right. And that, that's typically how you would stay safe cooking a kebab. And I mean, that's a really good question.
That is.
And, and it brought up the whole issue of cross-contamination.
Yeah.
Right. Like I said, if you have beef and chicken on the same kebab,
mm-hmm.
has to go to the chicken temperature of 165.
That makes sense.
So
cool.
Thank you very much, Thomas, for your question. And thank you for being a listener of Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander.
That's right.
And my co-host here, the doctor.
Woo-hoo!
We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And you can leave your questions by going to just send us an email at getyourbbqon@gmail.com.
All right. Well, it's that time of the show for us to check in with the doctor.
Not the Harley.
not the sound engineer.
Not the sound engineer.
Yeah, we're checking in with the doctor.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah, checking in with the pit master in training, Dr. Jones.
Yeah.
What's going on?
So I did not get to pork chops this weekend. Mm. I know you're disappointed. I am so sorry. I did not. I was in training all weekend long, actually, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah, all weekend long.
Great training. Training,
leadership training. It was great. It was good.
Right.
It was really
good. Long class. Yeah,
it was Saturday and Sunday. So, but however, I did do something like on a fly really fast.
Okay.
And that was, I did prepare some chicken wings. I already brought them out. I had them out. And I wanted round two with chicken wings. I'd done it before. It took them about 45 minutes to get done the first time I did it. And I was excited and I did it. It tastes so good. It was really, really good. So this time I wanted to try something a little bit different. I wanted to add a little bit more season, get a little bit more flavor, a little bit of a different type of rub to it.
Are these whole chicken wings?
These are whole chicken wings.
Okay,
yep.
Okay.
And I was really going for like a very good, full of flavor chicken wings. Because the first time I did it, I was very conservative on my,
spices.
Yeah. This time I was just all about it. And one of the things I did is I rubbed them down with olive oil.
Okay.
And then I put the spices on. It was hickory and barbecue is where I was going for.
Mm-hmm.
And I was rubbing them down. And oh my gosh, I was just salivating just looking at these things. Like, oh my gosh, this smells so good. I cannot wait to put them on the grill. And so finally, I throw them on the grill. Heat up the grill first.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had propane.
Yeah.
still. heat up the grill. Make sure it was nice and hot.
Yeah.
And, what we were talking about earlier is making sure that the grill is at, at temperature.
Yeah, right,
you know?
Right, just right, have
it
right.
It really does make a difference.
It makes a huge difference.
Oh, my gosh. Because these guys were done in at least like 10, 15 minutes.
Right.
Like really quick. My digital thermometer to the rescue. Putting in there for 15 seconds, making sure they got to 165.
Yeah.
Always do five over because that's who I am, just to make sure. They got to 170. I pulled them off. Now, this is the best part. They were so good that barbecue sauce wasn't really needed.
Oh, see, then that, so now.
Yes. Right. Yes.
So you're getting there.
Yes.
You're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I had one of the listeners, my mom was listening to the show, and she was saying, yeah, when the doctor was talking about those ribs, he said he's put all of this sauce all over the ribs, and it's just like sauce all over the ribs.
Right.
And I said, well, I just kind of let him slide on that,
right.
that day.
But, right.
But yeah, it sounds like you're getting there now.
Yes. I'm getting to a point where it's like, it's flavorful.
Right.
Like you don't even need barbecue sauce because it's just so good. And it was so funny. My daughter and her best friend, they had some. And I made some scallops because, I love my potato scallops.
Right, right,
and
right.
I forgot what, green beans. I had some leftover green beans and a roll, of course, the Hawaiian sweet.
Course,
the Hawaiian, the Hawaiian sweet rolls. Got to have that.
Right.
And my daughter came up. She said, Dad, these are the best you've ever cooked. She's like, this is so, so good. And her only critique was, she's like, just add even more seasoning. I'm like, more? Like, more? Really? She's like, yeah, more. I'm like, okay, when I make it again, I'll add even more. Right. So, it was so good. It was really, really good. I had a lot of fun making it. And in the end, it turned out to be a very good Sunday evening meal.
That's great. That's great, doctor.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, no need for sauce.
Yeah.
The doctor. Let's give the doctor another check mark over there, Harley.
Look at that.
All right.
I grew up so fast.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
It sounds like the doctor is getting there.
Absolutely. And we're having ribs for Christmas.
Right.
So I'm preparing that. And then also this weekend, I'm going to do some chops.
All right.
And the berry infusion. I'm really excited about the berry infusion.
Yeah, that berry infusion. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we're doing lamb chops tonight.
Oh.
And we're going to have the berry infusion.
Mm. cannot wait. Oh, yeah, cannot wait.
And so it's berry reduction.
Oh, berry reduction.
Gonna,
got it.
We're going to have the berry reduction.
I think I'm right. Berry white infusion. I don't know what I'm thinking.
Yeah. That's what right. You're thinking about. You're thinking about Barry White
and infusions. And I don't
right,
know.
Right,
no,
right.
Yeah.
All right.
But I'll let you know how it goes when next time we check in.
All right. We'll check in with the doctor next week.
Woo!
But right now, it's time for us to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk to our guests.
Sounds good.
All right.
Hey everyone, it's your favorite pit master in training, Dr. Andre Jones himself, and I'm super excited to let you know that I have my very own show. That's right, I am the host of All About the Win podcast, where myself and my fellow players interview local and national entrepreneurs about their greatest accomplishment thus far. Plus, we add a little bit of old school magic to make the stories come to life. You can check it out by going to www.allaboutthewinpodcast.com. That's www.allaboutthewinpodcast.com. And prepare to be inspired and entertained.
Welcome back from the break. You're listening to Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander. I'm here with my co-host, The Doctor.
Da-da-da-da-da.
And we have in our studio today...
Who do we have?
Jay Powell Esquire.
Oh.
Yeah, Jay. Yeah. Jay from the Powell Law Firm here in Tucson, Arizona. And they also have an office in Yuma.
What?
That's correct.
Yuma?
Yes, sir.
What in the world's in Yuma?
Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, I appreciate y'all having me on the show, man.
All right.
Yeah. Now, I've been listening now for a little while since we ran into each other and you told me about the show. So I've been checking it out. The first thing I told Cassie was, man, Ken got a lot of personality on the show. Not that you don't have personality.
But
on the show, it's a lot of personality, brother.
Yeah. It's turned up a little bit. Well, that's great, Jay. I know you've been practicing law here in Arizona for quite some time. And you've done a lot of great stuff. You helped a lot of people and a lot of people that I know of. You've helped in your law practice. And so what brings you to Tucson? What brought you to Tucson?
You know, that's interesting that you say that because I'm originally from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay.
Really?
And so when it was time to pick a law school, my folks had moved up to Phoenix in 92.
Okay.
And I graduated undergraduate from New Mexico State in 95.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm applying now to law schools.
Right.
And at that point in time, I'd been married already a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so my initial plan was to go to law school at ASU.
Okay.
And, you know, move kind of the same place my folks were living in.
Mm-hmm.
And so we applied at ASU, applied at U of A, applied at a couple other places.
Right.
And my wife said Tucson was close enough to my folks. So we stopped here.
That's great.
All right. Man, that's a great story.
Yeah. So I went to law school here, 95 through 98.
Yeah.
And graduated in 98. We moved up to Seattle, Washington.
Hmm.
My wife was working on her PhD at the University of Washington.
Okay.
And we were there 3 years and then came back to Tucson in 01.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's great. So you started at law school, but what interested you in law? Why did you decide that, you know, as a little kid, you know, one day I'm going to be a lawyer? I want to be a lawyer.
It probably was a little bit later on, but it really was a desire to help people. And you didn't see a whole bunch of us practicing law.
Mm. Black folks, African Americans.
Whole bunch of black folks practicing law. And so one of the things that I noticed while I was in undergrad, I played football at New Mexico State.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And, you know, on the football team, you have some people that have some problems and get in trouble. And it was actually the ones that had access to early advice, I'll say that.
Right.
That really turned out, you know, their situation turned out better than, you know, some of the other brothers on the team that had no access.
Right.
And so that, you know, just paying attention, observing these types of things, you know, I really felt there was a need in our community for, you know, more Black attorneys. And that's kind of really what sparked it.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. You graduated law school from the U of A?
Yes.
All right. That's great. And you passed the bar and you said you went up to Seattle to, you started up there.
Yeah. So we were up there for 3 years and I was actually working in the compliance department at the University of Washington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For the better part of the time frame up there. That, and I did, you know, some community service up there. Seattle has a large Black population up there. And, you know, I didn't know it when we moved up there, but at one point in time, Seattle was the second largest Black city in the United States.
Get out of here.
Wow.
And so, you know, with the market and the housing and everything else, the property that most of the Black people lived in, which was called the Central District, really increased. And when I say really increased, there were, you know, brothers out there that bought houses for $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 that were worth $1.2 million, $1.3 million. And so because of that, there was a real large middle class of Black people in Seattle. And that's actually, you know, started playing golf out there with some of the brothers, and you would go to some of these golf courses, and golf course probably be 70% African American.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, and we brought our own flavor to it. You know, there was a lot of talking, a lot of wolfing going on, a lot of gambling, but it was a good time. But
that's great.
Anyway, up there, because of the large Black population, there was a large community involvement up there. And so I learned a lot from some of the brothers up there about being involved in the community and doing community work.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So that was one of the things that when we moved back to Tucson, you know, I really wanted to try to bring that here as well.
Okay. So, so what brought you back to Tucson? So you up there, you're in Washington, and you certainly have become a part of the community, and you've got some, looks like you got some mentors, and you're learning some things from these from these guys up in Washington. What brought you back to Tucson?
You know, unfortunately, my sister, who was 5 years younger than me, got killed in a car accident. Up in Phoenix. So she was living in Phoenix with my folks, and got killed in a car accident. And at the time, we had our oldest son, who we had adopted. He was actually a student in my wife's class. My wife was teaching in the Floor and Wales School District while I was in law school. And he was a student in her class that was living in foster care, and the foster care people didn't want him anymore. And and so she came home one Tuesday and was like, "Hey, I got this kid in my class. And what do you think?" And I laughed because, you know, everybody's like, "Man, that's a great job you did." And the first question out of my mouth was, "Can he run and can he jump?" I hate to admit that now. So anyway, he was in middle school. Our middle son was about 3 years old, and I just felt like it was too far to be away from family at that time. So that's actually what brought us back.
Yeah, sense of family and being together with the family. Well, I mean, that's an awesome story, you know, you and your wife adopting a child, you know, in middle school.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's a real good kid.
Yeah.
A real good adult now. So.
Right.
Yeah, so you come back to Tucson, and when you first came back to Tucson, is that when you started your own practice?
No, I started out in Tucson working for the guy that I had law clerked for, which was Guglielmo & Associates, and we did mainly creditors' rights. And that's representing some of the larger banks, basic contract law, you know, collections, stuff like that. So that's where I started, and I stayed in that practice probably till about 09.
Till about 09.
Yeah. And then it was 09 that I kind of went out on my own.
Yeah.
And started doing my own thing.
So so what motivated you to go out on your own, to start your own thing?
it was always a goal of mine to own my own business.
Okay.
You know, kind of be your own boss, you know, and kind of do you.
Right,
you
right, know? Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying I was a difficult employee. However.
Right.
You know, there were some definitely some differences and some things that I thought I could do better. Mm-hmm. And you don't know those things unless you actually get out there and start up. So, you know, that's kind of what drove me. There was an opportunity that arose and it was time to make the move. And it was scary. You know, I mean, you go from having a solid paycheck every 2 weeks. And,
right.
You know, my wife was looking at me crazy. Like, hey.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Especially so, during 2008-09, during the recession and everything else. That was a big risk, a big jump.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you learn very quickly when you go out on your own is, you know, those first 2, 3, 4 years are kind of like a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some months you feel like you're going to be rich. And then some months it's like, man, I better go get me a job. You know, so
it's what they call feast or famine. Right?
Yes, that's right.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it was up and down for a while. You know, I heard somewhere that if you make it 5 years out,
then
you really are, you know, kind of good. And that actually held to be pretty true.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Yeah. So that's when you started Powell Family Law.
That's correct.
All right. Yeah. All right.
And what was the transition? Because you said that you're doing creditor and then you went to family law. How did you switch between the two? Because these are two different aspects of law.
Then they really are two different aspects of law. And one of the things that I learned, sometimes you fall into stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I started out doing a lot of business transactions, you know, breach of contracts, stuff like that. But there wasn't enough of that work. And so you start supplementing with what kind of you can find.
Right.
And, you know, with the divorce rate consistently climbing.
Yeah. Right. You're gainfully employed.
Yeah. So unfortunately, that's kind of how I got into it. And it's super steady. And like I said, business is pretty solid.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, one of the things you learn fairly early on is, again, you know, not a whole bunch of us in that field or any other field for that matter.
Sure.
But handling a case, you know, how do you handle a case? How do you deal with the client?
Mm-hmm.
You know, things of that nature. And I was able to bring something a little bit different to the field. You know, it's a very contentious area between, you know, anytime you get involved with, you know, people that are breaking up, it's never a pretty thing.
No.
Yeah, you know? Imagine so.
No.
Yeah. So, and you have a lot of attorneys out there that are, they look like they're trying to, you know, kill the other side.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember being in, you know, I was in a fairly big case, probably about 2 or 3 years into the practice of family law. And at one point in time, I looked at the woman, I said, hey, we're not getting divorced. You know what I mean? Like, hey, you need to, you know, back off. And so it was just a different style to attempt to get things done and, you know, get it done in a reasonable manner for our clients so that we're not billing them, you know, $1 million to get divorced.
And,
So and that's kind of how I broke into family law.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, it's time for us to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking to Jay some more about family law.
Sounds good.
Be right back.
Hey, Tucson, do you have a hankering for some good old down-home cooking? Well, you're in luck. Along with our award-winning barbecue, we have Southern Fried Catfish, mac and cheese, collard greens, fried okra, peach cobbler, sweet potato pie, and much more. 745-4746. That's 745-4746. Or visit our website. Come on down to Ken's Hardwood Barbecue and get your barbecue on.
Hey, this is Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander, the podcast. I'm here with the doctor, Andre Jones. And we are talking to Jay Powell Esquire.
Woo-hoo!
Jay Powell. He's the leader over at J. Powell Family Law. And Jay, before we left, you were talking to us and you telling us how you got into family law. So can you just tell us, what is family law?
Absolutely. Family law, it can range, but most people know it as divorce. You know, it's divorce, child custody, child support, things of that nature. So all of those things are wrapped up into family law, adoption, you know, everything down at kind of juvenile court on up.
Yeah, a lot of that could be pretty contentious.
Yeah.
You know, it really can, you know, and you get people, you know, unfortunately, that practice, you're in an area that really you catching people at their worst.
Right, yeah. Right.
You know, and I mean, you see people fighting over
anything and everything, right?
Anything and everything.
Yeah.
Dogs,
sure.
Cats,
right.
Pots and pans.
Oh, my gosh. The plants.
The plants. Yeah. 15-year-old refrigerators.
Wow. What?
Come on, man. Right.
Yeah. It's been in my family all this long time. I need to take it with me. Wow.
Yeah. So that more or less is kind of what it is. And, you know, like I said, it's an area where I really feel like I can help people kind of get through the process from a human standpoint, as well as a legal standpoint. Because, I mean, like I said, you're catching somebody at their worst moment.
Yeah.
The emotions are all over the place.
Yeah. And they're not thinking straight. They're all over the place. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you know, the thing about it is, Jay, I know you've always had this like calm demeanor.
Mm. Correct.
And I would imagine that would be a real asset in that type of law that you're practicing and to help folks get through it.
Right. And it does come in handy, and that is one of my strengths, you know, is usually the ability to stay calm for the most part. You know, there's times when you got to turn up the volume a little bit and, I certainly can do that. And, and you know, when it's necessary, it's necessary.
Yeah.
But again, I try to keep level headed, and that way it allows me to focus really on what is in the best interest of the client.
Right.
Not just about the client winning a small battle or, getting that 15-year-old refrigerator that's worth $50.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I wanted.
Let's use that strategically to, you know, get the case resolved.
Makes sense.
And help you out.
Yeah, you can keep your eye on the big picture.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which is needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. And then you also do something else. I see that you're also doing bankruptcy as well.
That's correct. And does
that fall under family law too, or is that something totally different?
No, it's something totally different.
Okay.
And so, like I was saying before, I started out in creditors' rights.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen that side of the picture. And so it was kind of a natural segue, if you will, to bankruptcy law and really having the ability to help people on that side of it. And so, in particular, with the pandemic and people being laid off and, you know, all of those things going on, it is starting to catch up negatively as far as economically goes. We haven't seen the big hit as far as what's coming. I mean, there will be another package that'll come out as far as, you know, once there's a transition, I assume, with the new president, et cetera.
Right.
Another financial packet coming out. But you really are starting to see now the financial impact of people not having worked for
six to nine months. Sure.
People's savings are starting to run out. The moratorium for evictions is going to be ending.
Right.
You know, so there's all kind of things that are going to put a lot of financial pressure on a lot of people. And so, you know, that's an area where I really feel like I can help individuals kind of get through that. We can get that fresh start that you're looking for, you know, and the ability to move on. And hopefully the vaccine then comes and, you know, fixes, you know, the COVID problem.
Right.
And
we
stuff
can bounce
like that.
Back. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's expectation of a bunch of foreclosures coming up here soon.
Mm.
Correct. Yeah. My wife, who is a research professor at the University of Arizona.
Okay.
They actually did a study that actually went nationwide, but they started out looking here in Tucson and then across the state. And it said that homelessness would be on pace to increase like three times. It was, you know, and for a variety of reasons regarding, you know, the COVID-19.
Right.
And so, you know, because of that, like you said, Ken, you know, foreclosures will be on the rise very quickly. Mm-hmm. Evictions will be on the rise very quickly.
Right.
You know, and again, those are things that put financial stress on mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and to be honest with you, there are some people that can ride the storm depending on the resources, family right. members, friends, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. But there's other people that don't have those resources that right. really need to look elsewhere mm-hmm. to kind of, you know, hold that storm back.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of them don't have a safety net.
That's yeah. right. That's right. Yeah. I'd say the majority
right.
is rolling without that safety net on a wow. month-to-month, mm-hmm. you know, paycheck-to-paycheck basis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man, and I know we're talking about bankruptcy, but one of the other things that have happened or that has been talked about during this COVID thing is the high divorce rate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And
so being in family law, I guess you would know about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what I saw, and this was kind of expected. So what unfortunately, what you have is the quarantine right at the end of March.
Right.
And so you're forcing a whole bunch of people to spend a whole bunch of time together.
Right. That really don't like each other.
Yes. And even some people that did like each other. I know right. my wife was looking at me crazy a couple times.
Yeah. How to get away with murder.
That's yeah. right. So, you know, yeah. and all of that, I don't know that people actually recognize what a thin line we're all kind of on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what can push you over the edge one way or the other.
Right. Right.
You know, and like I said, you know, I mean, it wasn't just the pandemic itself. It's all of the things that go with the pandemic.
Right. Right. Right.
You know, the worrying about getting sick, not just the getting sick
sure.
part.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
The lock in, you know, we had, my middle son is plays football at Sacramento State.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they sent them home in March. And then my daughter and my niece, you got me and my wife. And now all of a sudden we've got a packed house.
Uh-huh. With nowhere to go.
With nowhere to go.
Sounds like a really bad description of a bad horror movie. Yes. Yeah. It's like, you know, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, and like I said, you know, we you know, got good relationships.
Yeah.
You know, me and my wife, me and the kids, my sure. wife and the kids. And, you know, I mean, we found it difficult to,
right.
you know.
Because you have all this other stress.
Yes.
It's coming out.
That's right.
And Family Feud style.
Yeah. That's right. So,
yeah.
Interesting times. But anyway, you know, regarding the bankruptcy, I think that's an avenue and a tool, you know, which a lot of people, in particular Black people, don't necessarily see that as the tool that it really is and the way that people use it.
Right.
Donald Trump, for example.
Sure.
You know, and I'm not going to get into politics because it's you guys' show. So, but he used the bankruptcy tool on several occasions.
Sure.
And he used it effectively.
Right.
And we still elected him. But that's, you know, that's a whole nother story. But
no, I mean, so, you know, one of my things, you know, I've always had like this pet peeve of like the first thing that corporations and those, you know, they will file bankruptcy.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
They'll file bankruptcy. That's one of the reasons they even set up a corporation, which is a person, which is a.
That's another, right.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
the protection.
For the, yeah. They set it up for the protection.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the first thing, something goes wrong, then say, hey, we need to file bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so you got all kinds of businesses, airlines.
Yeah.
You got car
That's
manufacturers,
right.
dealerships, whatever. And so in that aspect, it's okay to file bankruptcy.
Right.
Right.
But then you watch TV And if you are individual,
a common man,
they're saying don't file bankruptcy.
Right.
Go do this.
Yeah.
Take this other loan. Do all these other things.
That's right.
And so those same businesses
right.
that would file bankruptcy in a heartbeat are telling you not to take that protection, which I think is a travesty.
It really is.
Right.
And it paints it really as a bad thing. Like, stay away. Yeah. Don't do it. It's not, you say it's a tool. And I remember even my upbringing, it's like, it's not a tool. It's not a tool.
Right.
It's something that you don't do.
Don't
do.
I mean, and the thing about it is, you know, I'm not going out and I'm not promoting or whatever to file bankruptcy. But if you find yourself, especially in this time, these times, in a situation where it just looks like you are going to be underwater forever,
right.
then you have, the tool would not be in the U.S. government laws.
Right.
That's right.
If it wasn't there to be used.
That's right.
You say it's a tool. How can it be used for those who are like really struggling right now? How could it really get, and like an example, I guess, to really help them get back?
So in a time like there, you know, there's several different kinds of bankruptcy. But the one that I believe to be the most effective is the Chapter 7. And that's a complete wipeout of your debt.
Oh, wow.
And so you have to qualify for the means test, or if you don't qualify the means test, there's another way to still qualify that's a little tougher, but basically it's based on income and bills.
Right.
And so if you're in a situation where you've lost your job, you're going to qualify for the means test because you have no money.
Right.
You know, if you're in a situation where your income is, you know, way low and your bills are far exceeding that,
right.
it's a way to start from scratch, you know. And so, you know, again, I believe that from an economic standpoint, the damage that has been done on the during the pandemic, really that wave is on its way, and we haven't seen the impact quite yet. You know, I mean, if you look at the numbers economically, people are still spending money.
Yeah. Holidays are here.
Yeah. They said, I heard that Black Friday, that was a record Black Friday.
Wow.
You know, and that was without people actually going to
the
store.
Right. Yeah. It's all online.
It's
right.
It's all online.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we're setting records.
That's right. You get your ear up. You kind of hear
right.
something's coming around the corner.
It's coming. So,
yeah.
And that's one way, you know, and like I said, one tool for people to use to try to, because once you eliminate that, you eliminate the stress from that. Mm-hmm. You eliminate the problems from that.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are some damages that occur, damages to the credit report, damages to, but if you get to that point, usually,
right,
you know, the credit is probably in trouble.
Sure. Anyway.
Yeah. Already.
Right. Yeah.
So,
it keeps the home less stress.
Yeah.
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 Between husband and wife.
That's whoever, right.
Yeah,
right.
Less stress.
Right. It might decrease the divorce rate.
Right. Exactly. Know, so. Right. Exactly. I'm trying to place it together here somehow. I'm trying to do
go.
It.
There you go.
That's right. But yeah, Jay, and I also know that you do some contract law. As a matter of fact, you helped us out in another business, another situation with a contract. We had some issue with a landlord, and that was really being unreasonable and was coming at us pretty hard. And you really came in there. I didn't think it was something that we could win, but you came in and you won the case for us and everything. So
yeah,
I really appreciate that. And you know, using your contract law experience to help out a small business that was in trouble.
Absolutely. No. And, you know, and I have a diverse background. Like I said, starting out in the corporate side of things, you know, with the contracts and seeing how things work from that side is a benefit. Your case was an interesting case, and I felt like it was an owner of a piece of property that was really trying to take advantage. It was a long case. I think we went 3 days, the 3-day trial.
Yeah, it was a long trial.
Yeah,
man.
So, but I ultimately believe that the judge made the right decision, and so no, that was it was a good case, good experience. You know, the whole thing. So I still remember the dinner.
We celebrated. We went out celebrated after that.
Oh, nice. Sure. Well deserved.
That was a huge deal. It was a huge deal for us. And,
only too happy to help. You know, you and Sharon have done so much in the community, one, but, you know, for me, for Claudia, being good friends with Cassie and Sean, and I feel like our relationship goes a little ways.
But you were a lifesaver in that situation.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, but and the thing is, you know, I've actually, you know, from afar, witnessed you helping a lot of people in different situations, different legal situations. So all that help that you give folks in the community is to be commended.
Mm-hmm. Now, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that too.
He also does something else in the community, right?
Yeah. You coached a lot of kids.
I used to coach. I had been coaching. In fact, I coached.
It's football, right?
Coached football. Right. 95 through 98 when I was in law school.
Yeah.
And then when we moved away and then came back. And so I've been coaching since in Tucson since 01.
Wow.
And I coached from 01 to 2012, 13, but still stayed active in the football community. I'm still currently the attorney for Tucson Youth Football, TYF. The president over there is Julius Holt.
Oh, okay.
He's a good friend of mine. And I'm still involved in that way and still involved in the activities. The Tucson Jaguars actually have a golf tournament coming up that I got a foursome for. And so stuff like that. But, you know, the coaching has kept me active and kept me involved in the young men's lives in Tucson. And there's a lot of need, certainly, for role models and mentorships for our youth in Tucson, in particular African-American youth in Tucson.
Yeah. I know that you've had a lot of your players go on to college. And so how does it feel to have, you know, when you see your players, and not just for the football side, but just to enter college for that, you know, secondary education and everything. How does that feel?
It feels good. We had my son's eighth grade year, the middle son, we had a real good team, a real good team, and quite a few of the players went on to play NAU, TCU, University of Arizona, things like that. But the thing that I'm most proud about is the boys that were on the team that had the opportunity to go on and play college football took advantage of really what college football should be, which is to get that degree.
Oh, awesome.
And the majority of the kids that were on that team were able to graduate and get their bachelor's degree, and some went on to graduate school.
How cool.
And things like that. So I'm really proud of that particular impact, you know, because the majority of the kids are coming from families without secondary education backgrounds.
That's terrific. That's really terrific.
Yeah, so no, it was real good. It's important to stay involved in your community and try to give back where you can. And that's one of the things, like I said, with both my daughter and my sons and, you know, having access, like we had talked about before, to an attorney for some of the kids that went away. We gave them the same message when you're leaving. Whatever the trouble is, you call here first. Let's discuss it. And then, you know, we figure out, you know, the better route. And that we started that with my oldest son, who ran track at the U of A. And then we continued that through. And, you know, my middle son took it with him up to NAU, and they used me a whole bunch.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, my daughter graduated from Sal Point just this last year in the 2020 class. And there were a lot of good kids in that class that are off, and you know, we had a basketball player, Evan Nelson, going to Harvard to play basketball.
Wow.
Bijan Robinson at Texas.
Yeah.
You know, we had a kid at Ohio State, you know, so one at UCLA, you know, so there were some kids that, you know, some kids of color that we really were able to extend that to and say, look, you know, it's kind of like that TV show, The First 48 Hours, you know?
Right.
You know, I don't watch it, but my wife does. And it's like what happens immediately really becomes significant in the outcome.
Right.
You know, and we get, you know, it's not the kids, you know, aren't making mistakes, but most of the time they're not mistakes that are big enough that it should impact their life the way that it does.
Sure.
And you see that in our community disproportionately. Mm-hmm. It's insane. So,
yeah.
You know, trying to just stay involved that way and help that way and make sure, you know, everybody has a fair opportunity.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, man. Cause stuff happens. And, you know, I think a lot of African-Americans don't realize what a little legal advice when things happen.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Up front,
yeah,
legal advice,
yeah,
before, you know, things get out of hand.
So absolutely.
Yeah, so you know, you need to take advantage of all your rights.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, so that's great. And I mean, honestly, I don't have a problem. I mean, it's the first thing I do anything goes down is I ask somebody.
Yeah.
If it's legal advice, it's an attorney. If it's tax advice, it's a tax guy, whatever. But, you know, so they say, if you don't know, ask somebody.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic, man, what you do.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
The fact that you're still involved, I mean, you're still involved in football because you are their counsel.
Yes.
Yeah, which is great. And everybody needs counsel. Right. Legal counsel. Everybody needs legal counsel. Mm-hmm. So let's switch the subject and talk a little bit about cooking.
Oh, here we go.
Let's talk a little bit about food.
Yeah.
I mean, out of New Mexico, you see, you know, your family, mom and dad, you grew up with your mom and dad in New Mexico. And I mean, what was food like around the house? How did you guys, you know, in your community and in your household, man, as you growing up, what was food all about?
So food in New Mexico is spicy.
Ooh, yeah, right.
I mean, you know, we got the, you know, New Mexico is known for the Hatch green chili.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And those usually come, you know, by the time you see Hatch green chili here, it's usually relatively mild. But, you know, me growing up, you know, we were eating that spicy food and have continued. And my wife's from New Mexico as well.
Oh, so okay.
We've continued that tradition and passed the tradition down. Mm. You know, onto the kids. So the kids really like spicy food. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really the majority of the food we eat.
Yeah.
It's pretty spicy and always has some kind of kick to it.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So even when we go to Ken's Harvard barbecue.
Right, yeah.
We getting that spicy barbecue sauce, you know?
The hot sauce, the hot barbecue.
Do you have to make it a little bit hotter, just to spice it up a little bit?
No, they done a pretty good job with that heat,
Yeah.
If you want the hot, we have the hot. So you do some smoking at home too, right?
You know, I do a little bit of smoking, and so I have a smoker. My wife's aunt owned a campground in Colorado.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the campground had about 12 units on it. And so she had bought this huge smoker to cook for everybody.
Yeah.
And so when she sold the campground, she said, "Hey, anybody want this smoker?"
Oh.
And hey, I was all in.
Raise your hand.
I'm jumping up and down. So I got the smoker. So that really kind of started my interest in it.
Yeah.
And it's got the big wood box and it's got the, so I dabble a little bit. Amateur chef, you know what I'm saying? But I'm constantly, you know, kind of picking the brain of both Ken and Sean, and you know, trying to figure out how I can do things right. Mm-hmm. And so one of the first shows that I listened to was the Turkey Show.
Smoking a turkey.
Right.
Which actually was timely because I smoked my first turkey last year.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And I smoked it. You know, there were just a couple things I did incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And Ken fixed those things for me. You know, and like I said, I, you know, first of all, I think my bird was too big. It wasn't that 12 to 15 pounds that I was talking about.
Right.
You know, I didn't do the brine for long enough. So this year, having listened to the show, and I listened to the show, I rewinded it probably three times, start to finish. So I heard you guys, you know, to talk about the bird. Yeah. So and it was a good experience.
That's great.
It was a good experience. The injections, the, you know, all that kind of stuff. That was all good advice. So I appreciate the cooking portion of the show. That's, that's for sure.
Well, we really appreciate it. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
So it's two things. Do you have any advice? And then how do folks contact you?
Mm-hmm. So you can contact me through email or, you know, on your show, Ken. I'm going to give out my cell phone number, which might be suicide, but that's all right. And so my cell phone is 520-282-3545.
Yeah, okay.
And that's my work cell, and you can access me there. And then my email address is jay@powellaw.org, and it's jay@powellaw.org. So there's three L's in a row.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And so as far as advice goes, you know, I think first and foremost, try to stay as safe as possible. Mm-hmm. I heard the first vaccines went out today. And so help is on its way.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if you need some advice, if you need some counseling, you need to talk about your situation, whether it be divorce or bankruptcy, give me a call.
All right. Well, I don't know about the doctor, but it's been certainly been a pleasure having you on the show, Jay.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. And
yeah,
like I said before, man, I just, you know, all the help that you extend to folks is I think it's remarkable, and it's appreciated.
Well, I certainly appreciate the opportunity being on here. I appreciate what you guys are doing up here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Jay. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot, fellas.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, that's a wrap. Thank you for joining us today on Get Your Barbecue On with Ken Alexander. Remember, you can also hear us on Anchor.fm, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on our website, kenshardwoodbbq.com. Just click podcast and you can listen there. Thank you and take care.